We can get in big trouble for reading somebody else's mail, unless those people are dead or have released their correspondence for the public to view. And in those cases, what a treasure trove. Being able to read the private thoughts of either key figures in history or figures at key points in history is fascinating. Our guest this hour figured that out a long time ago. Sean Usher began compiling letters for a website called Letters of Note several years ago. We talked to him about a year ago when he published a book by that name in its American version. He's now followed the letter with lists. His latest book is Lists of Note, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. Sean Usher, good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's great to be back.
So this is a whole new category. Is it much harder to find lists than letters, or did they sort of pop up with the letters?
Exactly that, yeah. So when I was researching Letters of Note back in 2009 is when I started, I was looking through loads of archives and museum collections and dusty old books looking for amazing letters written by interesting people. And I kept finding lists written by the very same people, more so, in fact, than letters themselves. So I put them all to one side and I said to myself, one day when I finish Letters of Note, or at least got the first book out, I will come back to lists and do the same thing with lists. Because they are just so fascinating. The first one I found that kind of triggered the idea for me was a to-do list written by Johnny Cash. Very charming, in which he says things like, I must eat, pee, kiss June, which was his wife at the time, not kiss anyone else. Just this really, really kind of fluffy list that completely charmed me. I just thought, I just found this by mistake. There must be millions and millions of these. We've been writing lists for longer than we've been writing letters. Everyone I speak to writes lists. Not so many people write letters these days, obviously. It's a treasure trove. It really is.
The complete Johnny Cash list is not very long. Is not smoke, kiss June, not kiss anyone else, cough, pee, eat, not eat too much, worry, go see mama, practice piano. And then in the notes section, it says not write notes. This is on one of those things to do today lists. It's really a charming little piece of stuff.
Isn't it? Yeah. So that's the first list, I get mixed up with letters and lists these days. That's the first list in the book as a kind of nod to the fact that I found it, and that's the one that kind of triggered the idea for me. I found that one. When I'm looking for letters and lists, I often look through the archives of auction houses, because a lot of these incredible documents, these letters and lists, get sold at auction for huge amounts of money. And I just stumbled upon this Johnny Cash one that was sold at auction a few years ago. I just fell in love with it straight away.
Are they well catalogued, or are you pretty much, is this like buying a storage unit in one of those TV shows? You just buy the contents, not really knowing what's in there.
It's tricky, yeah. It takes a lot of time. I mean, 90% of my time is spent, no, that's too much actually, maybe 70% of my time is spent kind of delving through archives and trying to make sense of all these masses of documents. I'm a nosy person, clearly, by nature, so it's the perfect job for me. Had I not been successful with the books, I'd still be doing this as a hobby. So to be able to do it as a career as well is incredible. But yeah, a lot of my time is spent diving through all these incredibly chaotic archives, which is heaven to me.
It's interesting, though, that the notion that the passage of time makes what you do a lot more respectable, because, I mean, this is the essence of going through somebody's stuff. But when they're no longer here, you know, you're an archivist, but, you know... You're a bit of a voyeur if it happens when the person's still alive.
Oh, it's completely, yeah. It's a legitimate form of snooping, what I do. I spend a lot of time also kind of contacting people's estates or people, because a lot of these people have died, but quite a few are still alive, so I've just getting permission to use these lists and for the letters has put me into contact with some amazing people, you know, either the families of these dead people or the people themselves. The whole journey has just been a fantastic experience. I'm completely obsessed.
It is a really fascinating obsession, and it's easy to pick up this fascination that you have. I just flipped it open to Raymond Chandler on page 250. Similes and comparisons. What is it that's going on in this list? This is some fun stuff in here.
Well, he was famously a detection fiction writer, and he famously loved similes. He had notebooks full of them. It was one of his kind of trademarks in his books. So I just found this list of similes he'd written down that just made a perfect list. It's things like a face like a collapsed lung, as cold as a nun's breeches, as shiny as a club woman's nose, a mouth like a wilted lettuce, a thready smile, the triangular eye of a squirrel, as rare as a fat postman. They're just, every single one is gold, you know, and the difficulty with this was kind of cutting it. I had to choose just one page out of the notebooks, and this is the page I chose. I mean, he literally had notebooks full of these amazing similes.
Really? So these just went on and on and on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, well. Relentless. I don't know how he did it.
As clean as an angel's neck. I got to love that one. So, Sean, is there a particular rhyme or reason to the organization, like for the fact that you have the British meat carver from the Middle Ages right behind Johnny Cash's lovely little note?
No, I mean, it's the same with letters of note and lists of note. I've tried to make it seem as random as possible. I don't want there to be... I want it to be a roller coaster of emotions, you know. I don't want to have two funny lists next to each other if I can help it. There's also, with a lot of these lists, I've been able to track down the original documents, so you see a photograph of the list itself, which you can see the handwriting and everything. What I don't want to do is have too many lists without photographs next to them. So, I must have spent something like 3 weeks just working out the order in which these lists kind of sit in the book. So it's meant to seem random, but it was in fact a huge task.
And how many lists end up in the book versus how many you had available to you for the website?
Goodness me, for the book there's 125, which in the grand scheme of things is just a pinprick, you know. On the website I've got hundreds and hundreds, but I basically chose from a pool of thousands, which is a huge, huge task, but so enjoyable.
Well chosen, and I'm going to say, as you go through the book, you think, well, come on, how interesting could a book... And there are shopping lists in here, too, but as you flip through it, you realize, wow, there's some really fascinating stuff. We'll talk more about the contents of the book, Lists of Note, with its compiler, Sean Usher, when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well, if you'd like to join us, back here with Sean Usher and you in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Ridley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Sean Usher, the British writer and compiler. He is compiling a lot of stuff. He has been writing putting together the website Letters of Note for several years now. It has the companion website Lists of Note. There are now books for both categories as well. Lists of Note is right in front of me, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. Yes, there are some shopping lists in here, also to-do lists. You heard about Johnny Cash's a few moments ago, but just some amazing things in here in which people make lists to organize their lives and their thoughts and their wishes and hopes. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Sean about these. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I made reference to the Carver's List, which follows Johnny Cash's short note. And this is one of these cases where you go far enough back in history, and it's really hard to figure out the context here. So what is this terms of the Carver that we're looking at here?
Well, this was I came across this by complete mistake as well, looking for something else. So back in the 1500s, or earlier than that, actually, the carving of meat was a fine art, and it was to be a successful carver of meat, which was a profession of its own. You had to go through years of training, and as well as that, they had certain terminology when it came to types of meat and the way it's carved. So it's basically from the Middle Ages. It's a list of all these terms related to the carving of meat. I won't read it in Middle English because I can't.
Right.
But I can read it in the interpretation into modern English. There's things like break that deer, rear that goose, lift that swan, spoil that hen, thrust that chicken, dismember that heron, disfigure that peacock. So every single animal, every single type of meat has a different kind of a term related.
I noticed that. It's like the pride of lions and the covey of quail and all that sort of thing. But
yeah.
This is, I don't know, sort of macabre after a while, especially when you disfigure that peacock.
I know, yeah, and then splat that pike. But it's a wonderful, kind of exploration of language at the time. I mean, it's I found the original document as well, so you can see it kind of typed out in this amazing typography.
It is in wonderful shape. I mean, there's so much of the stuff in here is looking pretty good, including some things you've turned up from what appears to be thousands of years ago. How far and wide did you go looking for these things?
In what, geographically?
Yes.
Well, all over the world. Luckily, I didn't have to travel too far because we've got the internet, which makes us incredibly lazy, but also really helps you when it comes to researching these kind of things. But I've been in touch with archivists and museums all over the world looking for these incredible lists, and they span from kind of 2,000 years BC. Up to very modern day. I think Christopher Hitchens' list was only a few years ago, and just before he died, actually. But yeah, one of the earliest lists is the Dream Book, which was from 1220 BC, which is an ancient Egyptian list. In ancient Egypt, they believed, as certain people do today, they believed that dreams could be interpreted. So this is an incredible list that has a numerous interpretations for dreams. Some are good, some are bad. So there's things like if a man sees himself in a dream sitting in a garden in the sun, that's good. It means pleasure. If a man sees himself in a dream mating with a cow, that's also good, strangely. That means spending a happy day in his house. If a man sees himself in a dream sleeping on the ground, that's good. It means consuming his property. And then you've got a list of negative dreams. So if a man sees himself seizing one of his own legs, that's bad. A report about him by those who are yonder. If a man sees himself in a dream eating hot meat, that's bad. It means not being found innocent. So all these really fascinating interpretations of dreams. And again, you can see the original document. It's a beautiful, beautiful document written on this old tree bark. It's a beautiful thing.
I wonder what that was, and I wondered how it had survived so long, too.
Well, thankfully, this is from the British Museum that I found this, and it's all of their exhibits are so well preserved. I don't know how they manage it, but thankfully they do, and it's a gorgeous document.
Now, not all lists look forward to, you know, things I plan to do or things other people need to do or things that need to be happening in the future. I mean, for example, the French novelist Georges Perec put together a really interesting list. What did he do here?
I mean, this is my not my very favourite, but it's one of my favourites. So Georges Perec was, as you said, a French novelist, and he was obsessed with lists. I mean, all through his books, he wrote lists. In fact, I think one of his books was just entirely consisted of lists. It was an incredible thing. But in 1974, he made a list of every single thing that he drank and ate throughout the whole year, and it's just this. Amazing. I don't know why I find it so fascinating. I think it's just a task in itself. I quite admire the fact that he stuck this out for a year. It's also a fascinating thing to look at. It's literally just a list of everything. The title, I mean, this is translated from French. The title is Attempt at an Inventory of the Liquid and Solid Foodstuffs Ingurgitated by Me in the Course of the Year 1974. Very snappy title. It's literally just a list of food and drink. Things like 4 artichokes, 1 asparagus, 1 aubergine, 1 mushroom salad, 14 cucumber salads, 4 cucumbers a la creme, 14 celery remoulades, 2 Chinese cabbages, 1 palm heart. It goes on for ages. And ages, and I considered whether to kind of just to have an excerpt of this list, but that kind of defeated the object. I thought you've got to show the whole thing. You know, he made a huge list for a good reason. But I just really admire it for many reasons, and it's I find it quite comforting.
Comforting in what sense?
I don't know. I find it comforting to see. I don't know why actually, but every time I look at it, I feel quite comforted. Maybe it's because it's about food and I've got a huge appetite. I'm not sure. But I find it comforting to see everything so kind of contained. I think, well, me especially, I think we're kind of humans love to make sense of chaos, you know? And I think listing everything you've eaten throughout the year kind of packages everything into one safe little package. I think that really appeals to me for some reason.
You know, and it's interesting too in the context of the current times when people seem to want to report so much about what they're doing on the internet, so that it's not just, you know, the taking pictures of your meal on Facebook, And putting them on Facebook and Instagram, but also the idea of people carrying around cameras on themselves to record everything they do in life. This predates the internet by a good 20 years, and yet here he is doing the same sort of thing. So this interest in the very daily things we do is not new.
Exactly. I mean, this trumps everything. You know, how can you compete with this? I'm a huge fan of Georges Perec anyway, purely for the fact that he was so obsessed with lists. But this is one of my favorites. Yeah, I wish he had been around these days, you know. Had he been on Twitter, he would have had the best time.
Oh, he would have indeed. Oh, that's a great thought. Yeah, I identified this as the list of all lists when I reached it. It's very early in the book. Now, congratulations. We've been hearing for years about the fact that Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy, and Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln. And it is Evelyn Lincoln's list that makes it into this book, and her list is a truly fascinating, if not chilling, one.
So this is an incredible list. I was looking through an auction house again, searching for a letter written by JFK, which I never found, incidentally. But I came across this list that was up for auction back in 2005, I think. But it was never sold, and I can't believe it was never sold. And since then, it's been handed down to a different auction house, and it's since been lost, as far as I can tell. But this was written by, as you say, JFK's secretary, Evelyn, who was his secretary for quite a while, for a number of years. And she was in the motorcade the day that JFK was killed. And the same day, as she flew back to the White House, she wrote down a list of all the people she suspected could have killed JFK. So it's a list of suspects in the murder of her boss. It's just incredible. I might as well read it all out.
Sure.
Short. Lyndon, KKK, Dixiecrats, Hoffa, that's Jimmy Hoffa, obviously, John Birch Society, Nixon, DM, which is, I can't pronounce it, but the South Vietnamese leader at the time was called Ngo Dinh Diem, rightist, CIA and Cuban fiasco, dictators, communists. And then on the back, on the reverse of this list, it says, there is no end to the list of suspected conspirators to President Kennedy's murder. Many factions had their reasons for wanting the young president dead. That fact alone illustrates how the world suffers from a congenital proclivity to violence. So just this amazing moment in history. I never knew about this, and it's rarely been mentioned in books either. So to kind of stumble upon this in an auction house, in the archives of an auction house, was quite a moment.
And it's somebody who should have been obvious to us as a person who was very close physically to the president at all times, and yet I have no idea what she looks like. This is the first I've ever heard of anything that she's ever written, and of course it's only because you found her list in an auction house thing.
It's crazy. I mean, I'd never heard of her either. But there's a lovely photo, you can find it online. There's a lovely photo of JFK and Evelyn Lincoln in the White House, and it's a gorgeous photo of them. But it's just a really sad, well, clearly a sad moment in history, but just a fascinating document that kind of shows a side of things that I never realized even existed.
Evelyn Lincoln's list, one of many, one of 125 in the list compiled, in the book compiled by Sean Usher called Lists of Note, a follow-up to his earlier Letters of Note. He's got websites by both names as well. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the lists and the letters. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I don't know what it is. There's something almost comforting when you're looking at the handwriting of somebody who is this gigantic figure in history. In this case, Pablo Picasso, whose own list follows Evelyn Lincoln's by a page. It's just really interesting to just look at, oh, wow, you know, this is a giant of the earth, and he's got, you know, sloppy handwriting like the rest of us.
It's nice, isn't it? It's nice to know that someone as talented as Picasso was had slouchy handwriting. I completely agree. I'd never even seen his handwriting before finding this list, you know. And I've searched for letters of his before, and I've still never seen his handwriting. But this was in 1913, the International Exhibition of Modern Art, which was a huge occasion. This was the first real time that people in the US had been kind of shown modern art of the kind we now know. The person that was organizing it was an American painter, Walt Kuhn, and he didn't know which artists to invite from Europe. So he asked Picasso, as you would, and Picasso came up with this list of recommendations of all these incredible European artists. So again, another incredible moment in history, you know, just Picasso listing his favorite European artists.
It's a very simple list. It looks like it's almost the back of an envelope or something.
Yeah, I think it is the back of an envelope, yeah. I didn't actually find out. But yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
That's great stuff. Oh, so what is the Anti-Flirt Club? That's a really great list too.
Yes, which I've forgotten where this one is actually. This one is?
Page 12.
Oh, here it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, 1923, there was a lady called Alice Riley. She began the Anti-Flirt Club because she was absolutely sick of women in her local area being harassed by men in cars who drove past them and kind of wolf whistling and giving out all sorts of sexist comments. So she started an anti-flirt club. It did very well. It was in the news. I think it was the Washington Post wrote an article about this little club. And this was they had a list of rules, 10 rules for the anti-flirt club. And I read this article in the Washington Post and found out about the rules. And I just thought, my goodness, this is what a snapshot of history. So it's rules such as don't flirt. Those who flirt in haste oft repent in leisure. Don't accept rides from flirting motorists. They don't all invite you in to save you a walk. Don't use your eyes for ogling. They were made for worthier purposes. Don't go out with men you don't know. They may be married and you may be in for a hair-pulling match. Don't wink. A flutter of one eye may cause a tear in the other. So yeah, there's 10 of these fantastic rules.
And don't let elderly men with an eye to a flirtation pat you on the shoulder and take a fatherly interest in you. Those are usually the kind who want to forget they are fathers.
I know. It's depressing to realize that not much has changed, actually, and these rules could have been written kind of 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, instead of 1923. But this is fascinating. You say that you were spurred to go look for the list based on something else you saw in the news?
Yeah, I wasn't even looking at something related to lists. I heard something about the Anti-Flirt Club, found the article on the Washington Post website, and it just kind of snowballed from there. But quite a few of these lists, often the best ones, just kind of come across me. I come across by accident. You know, the best things usually do.
I sense a fair number of late nights in your life where the inspiration hits you and suddenly you're just pounding away on the keyboard looking for something on the internet.
Completely, yeah. I was going to say it's ruined my life. It hasn't at all. It's made my life infinitely better. But it kind of, all I ever think about, 90% of the day, is lists and letters. When I meet someone, the first thing I think is, I wonder if he writes letters. I wonder if she writes lists. This is terrible. Whenever I hear that someone famous has passed away, the first thing I think is, I wonder if they wrote letters. I wonder if they wrote lists. I mean, it's the first thing that comes to me whenever I kind of meet people or hear about people, which is a good thing, but it's also quite rude.
Have you've refrained from asking thus far? Then is that the?
Oh, point? I don't ask. No, I just silently. Go to the computer and look on Google.
Sean Usher's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is called Lists of Note, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. Benjamin Franklin may win the gold medal here. What is it that that you brought in from him here?
Well, Benjamin Franklin, I mean, goodness, I could have written a book just about Benjamin Franklin's list. He was just obsessed with lists, as he was with letters. Actually, I don't know how he found the time. As with many people back in the day, people like Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin, they wrote thousands and thousands of letters and lists. But they also, you know, had jobs. You know, I just don't know where they found the time. Well, they didn't have Twitter and the TV. Maybe that's the answer. But Benjamin Franklin, there's two of his lists in the book. There's his list of, and this was a list he really followed. This was his 13 virtues, which he wrote in 1726. And it was all these virtues, and it was things he tried to stick to. And he kept a notebook in which he charted his progress throughout the years. And it's things like temperance, eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation. 2, silence, speak not but what may benefit others or yourself, avoid trifling conversation. 3, order, let all your things have their places. Let each part of your business have its time. So there was 13 of these virtues that he really tried to adhere to, and he did very, very well according to the notebooks he kept.
But then, other list is sort of the flip side of all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This flies in the face of everything we've just talked about. So this was a list he wrote in which it was called the Drinker's Dictionary, and it was a list of terms. It was a list of similes, essentially, relating to drinking. So it's things like, he is addled, he's afflicted, he's bewitched, his head is full of bees, as in, you know, he's drunk, essentially. And this list goes on for pages and pages. He's eaten the cocoa nut, he's got the nightmare, he drank till he gave up his halfpenny, he drank till he gave up his pretty, has scalped his headpan, he sees two moons, he's in liquor, he's in limber. It's honestly, it's just amazing. But it's actually, it's followed by another list, which is essentially the same, but which was written in 1927 by Edmund Wilson. He did exactly the same thing, and he wrote down a list of terms related to drunkenness. And this was slightly more modern, obviously, but it's things like lathered, plastered, soused, bloated, polluted, saturated, full as a tick, loaded for bear, mark, whoops down, paralyzed, ossified, out like a light, passed out cold, embalmed, buried, blotto, lit up the sky. Again, but both of them are fantastic.
I really, some of these don't make any sense, but they're fun just to look at, like lit up like the Commonwealth.
I mean, what does that even mean?
I don't know. To have the screaming memes, to have the heebie-jeebies, to have the whoops and jingles, to burn with a low blue flame. There's a really good one for being drunk. It's great to have both Edmund Wilson and Benjamin Franklin basically back-to-back on pages talking about ways to describe drunkenness. Just one of the many features of Lists of Note compiled by Sean Usher. We'll come back and talk more with Sean and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking once again with Sean Usher. We talked to him last year about his project Letters of Note, which began as a website and turned into book form about a year ago. He's now out with a follow-up called Lists of Note, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. Lists made by people who either were famous themselves or did famous things, or at least stood next to famous people at key points in history. Some great lists in here. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the project at 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in the listening area. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. There's a couple of lists I want to take in tandem here, and one is Robert Boyle's list, which he was imagining things for the future, and then there's another one by Robert Heinlein along the same general lines. Can you tell us about those two?
Yeah, so these were both essentially predictions. The Robert Boyle list, Robert Boyle, as you probably know, was the father of modern chemistry. And in 1662, he essentially wrote a list of things that he hoped would one day be achieved by science. A lot of which were impressively did come true. There's things like the art of flying. I mean, bearing in mind this was 1662, you know, the art of flying. The cure of wounds at a distance, the emulating of fish without engines by custom and education only, the transmutation of metals, the making armor light and extremely hard. But he even mentions, you know, not in these terms, but he even mentions GPS, light bulbs, cosmetic surgery. He really does predict quite a few things that did come to light. And then the Robert Heinlein list. Again, he wrote this, was it 1962, I think?
1949, it looks like.
Oh, 49, sorry. So he wrote a list of things that he believed, predictions for the year 2000. Many of these he kind of missed the mark, and quite a few of them seem to be things that we're very close to achieving, but haven't quite. But he did, I mean, there's number 11, for instance. I'll just read out some of them. Number one, interplanetary travel is waiting at your front door. It's yours when you pay for it, when the government is doing at least on an experimental basis. A contraception and control of disease is revising relations between sexes to an extent that will change your entire social and economic structure. In 15 years, the housing shortage will be solved by a breakthrough into new technology, which will make every house now standing as obsolete as outdoor privies. He was so specific with these predictions. But number 11, which he definitely got right, your personal telephone will be small enough to carry on your handbag. Your house telephone will record messages, answer simple queries, and transmit vision, which is so very true.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm struck, though, by number four, though. It appears utterly impossible that the United States will start a, quote, preventive war, close quote.
Yes.
We will fight when attacked, either directly or in a territory we have guaranteed to defend.
Yep, how wrong he was. There's also, there's another one as well that's quite... I can't find it. I'll maybe come back to that one. But yes, fascinating list. But he did, he got a few of them right.
And Heinlein, of course, was a science fiction writer, which I failed to note up front. But he predicts we will not achieve a world state in the near future. The whole president of Earth thing that is often reflected in science fiction, he didn't see that happening.
No. He also says by the end of the century, mankind will have explored the solar system. So we thought we'd actually have explored the entire solar system. And we're so very... it's such an early stage still.
All right, so from the marveling of the future to some of the really grim things of the past, the Bill of Mortality from A Week in London. What's listed here?
So this was which list number is this?
Sorry, I'm flipping for it myself. Let me come back to the table of contents. Bill of Mortality, page 30.
Right, thank you. So there's so many lists in here.
It's the diseases and casualties this week from August 1665, I see.
So this was a very common thing that was done at the time back in London in the 1600s. There used to be a list that was published each week of deaths in London and the reasons for the deaths. A lot of them are diseases which have since died out, thankfully. But it's just a fascinating document. And this is at the time of... the Great Plague, so you get to see all these incredible reasons for death. Things like rupture, scouring, scurvy, sore leg is a reason for death. Stillborn, suddenly as a reason. But there's also, I've had to translate a few of these because they are completely...
Sure, like surface.
A flux, what was called flux at the time is now known as dysentery. Rising of the lights is what they used to call lung disease, which is fascinating in itself. Scouring is in fact dysentery. So they used scouring and flux interchangeably. Teeth, if they wrote down teeth, it meant infants who had died during teething, which is horrific. If they wrote consumption, it was those who died of tuberculosis. A historically fascinating document. But these were printed every single week and handed out as free leaflets in London.
It's amazing, too. I mean, when you look at the list, I mean, just the ways in which people died then that don't die now. I mean, 54 people died of old age. 23 women apparently died in childbirth. 174 of consumption. Well, that seems like the biggest one. And then you go to the right side of the page and realize, wow, 3,880 died of the plague in a single week.
Terrible.
These are one of the lists that, and here again, I mean, there's no real narrative that goes with it, but these illuminate so much of a different time in our history and help us better understand the kinds of things that people dealt with back then.
Yeah, but they're always the most fascinating ones that kind of shine a light on these previously dark areas. I also love the lists that show you a different side to people. You know, there's a list by Einstein. Have you read this one?
Yes.
In which he his marriage. I never thought. I'll read the list out first, actually. So Einstein, his marriage wasn't doing particularly well. This was in 1914. And he agreed to stay with his wife, but only on condition that she agreed to this list of demands that he wrote up. It's things like, I won't read the whole thing, but it's things like, you will make sure that my clothes and laundry are kept in good order. You will make sure that I receive my three meals regularly in my room. You will make sure that my bedroom and study are kept neat. You will renounce all personal relations with me insofar as they are not completely necessary for social reasons. Specifically, you will forego my sitting at home with you, my going out or traveling with you. You will not expect any intimacy from me, nor will you reproach me in any way. You will stop talking to me if I request it. I mean, she agreed to this as well. This is such an incredibly oppressive list that she did agree to, and they stayed married. But they did eventually divorce. I think it was 5 years after this list was made. But I had no idea that Einstein was even... slightly like this.
Nor did I, and you end up thinking at the end, I'm glad you put the postscript in there about the fact that they did divorce, because by that point you're thinking, well, this is a good thing. This
exactly,
really should have happened, yes.
Thank goodness, yeah. But yeah, and then you've got further on down the books, you've got Marilyn Monroe's List of Dream Lovers, in which she one of her dream lovers is Albert Einstein, and you think, oh my God,
if only she'd known, if only her book had been out by then. Leonardo da Vinci is in here a couple of times, and I'm interested. You know, the things that he writes of are not terribly unsurprising for him, and the things that he wanted to find out more about. But what's more interesting is the fact that since you do include the original versions of his writings, he had a really strange technique.
Yes, well, for one, he wrote right to left. So it's incredibly difficult to read. Well, it's impossible to read for me. I don't know about you, but he also filled up notebooks full of these incredible lists and writings alongside his drawings. So he used to draw anatomy all the time. So on this, there's a to-do list that he wrote in 1510, all the things he wanted to learn and do as he made this trip to the medical school. Things like observe the holes in the substance of the brain where there are more or less of them, describe the tongue of the woodpecker and the jaw of a crocodile, give the measurement of the dead using a finger. It's a really quite grim list, but it's alongside the list on this page that you can see there's sketches of the human brain and the lung. So it's a gorgeous, gorgeous document. Impossible to read, absolutely impossible, even if I could speak his language, you know?
Right, I ended in the same place myself. It's like, well, even if I could work out the lettering here, I still have to translate from Italian and not in a position to do that. Sean Usher is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His latest book is called Lists of Note. There are obviously some things in here that are very, very somber, like the Bill of the Dead in London in the 1600s. But then there's stuff that just makes you laugh out loud, including lists that never were quite real, like the other Disney list that shows up in here. There's one from Walt Disney, but then there's one that purports to be from somebody in the Disney organization. This is list number 26. And
26. Oh, yes.
So, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs by another name. What's happening here?
Well, there's two Disney lists in this book. They're both amazing. The first list is so when they were making Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, it was adapted from the Brothers Grimm tale, as we now know. But the Brothers Grimm didn't name the dwarfs, so Disney had to come up with. They came up with a long list of something like 54 names for the dwarfs. That is just incredible. But this other list, this was in 1986. And the animators at Disney weren't happy because the executives at Disney wanted to change the title of Basil of Baker Street to the more easily understandable The Great Mouse Detective. You know, they really wanted to kind of spell out the essence of the story in the title, which the animators hated. They thought they should just leave it kind of, the Basil of Baker Street, basically. So an animator called Ed Gombert, he wrote, he pretended to draw up this list of other alternative names for classic Disney films. I'm not explaining this very well, actually. But essentially, it's a list of names of Disney films.
If they had been as dumbed down as the one that was suggested by Peter Schneider.
Dumbed down. Yeah, had they been dumbed down. So it's things like Seven Little Men Help a Girl, Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. You've got The Little Deer Who Grew Up for Bambi. The Girl with the See-Through Shoes. The Amazing Flying Children, Two Dogs Fall in Love. It's just fantastic. And this was sent around the studios at Disney, and it became so popular. I think it got leaked to the LA Times, and they printed a copy of it in the LA Times, and the executives at Disney just lost their minds. And this became a really famous memo at the time back in 1986, and it's an incredible thing. It's hilarious.
Any word on whether Ed Gombert kept his job?
He did keep his job, yeah. Yes, he did. Okay. I don't think they found out it was written by him for quite a while.
It's one of the other. Well, there's two other ones on this list here that I want to bring up. One is the translation of Dumbo into The Wonderful Elephant Who Could Really Fly, and then The Evil Bonehead, which I'm not sure that actually corresponds to an actual Disney movie.
The Evil Bonehead. I've never worked out what that is.
No. All right. So another movie list here is the list of what could have happened at the end of Gone with the Wind, other than, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, because the censors had some issues with those.
This was back in obviously this was ages ago. This was 1939, and the censors said that the word damn was too rude to use. This is when they were taking a look at the early cut of the film. So the producers of the film had to think of an alternative line for what is now the most famous line in movie history. So they typed out, you can see the document as well, it's a typewritten list of alternatives to the line, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." And some of them are terrible, like most of them are terrible actually, and they get worse as you go down. But it's things like, "Frankly, my dear, it leaves me cold. Frankly, my dear, I am completely indifferent. Frankly, my dear, my indifference is boundless." And then you get to the bottom and it's things like, "Frankly, my dear, I've withdrawn from the battle. Frankly, my dear, the whole thing is a stench in my nostrils. Frankly, my dear, it makes my gorge rise." I mean, thank goodness they succumbed in the end and determined that that damn could be used.
They did indeed relent, and we would not have known about the specific versions of what happened if you hadn't dug up the list for us.
Exactly.
You've already mentioned the fact that you get some rethinking of famous people, certainly as we did with Einstein. Who would you say provided the greatest surprise out of all these lists?
The greatest surprise? Well, I think it is Einstein, the greatest surprise. But I think the one that moves me most is the list written by a lady called Hilary North. She worked at the World Trade Center when the towers went down. But she didn't go into work that morning. I think she went to a doctor's appointment. And shortly after I think she was working on the 103rd floor. She was working, so most of her colleagues died when the planes hit the towers. And afterwards, she wrote a list of all the things. The list is entitled "How My Life Has Changed," and it's a list of all the things that she can no longer do now that her colleagues have passed away. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. "I can no longer hang out with Millie. I can no longer laugh with Donna. I can no longer drink beer with Paul. I can no longer leave a message with Andrea. I can no longer gossip with Anna. I can no longer compliment Lorenzo. I can no longer trade voicemails with Norman. I can no longer ride the elevator with Barbara. I can no longer be happy about Jennifer's pregnancy. I can no longer walk with Adam. I can no longer say hello to Stephen every morning. I can no longer take my life for granted."
Wow.
It's just a really, really incredible list.
A real standout in a whole book of standouts. Lists of Note, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. Sean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Sean Usher.
Thank you.
All right, take care.